Welcome. I'm one of the original, I'm one of the OGs. So we've been doing this seminar now for the summit now for, it's the sixth time we've done it. Fifth, sixth, yes. We started after the pandemic. We all needed something to be in the same room with other people. We didn't realize it would be so popular and it's grown so much. So I'm very grateful to everybody. I'm not sure how many of these you've been to. If this is your first one, you are welcome. But let me kick on. So this is what I want to talk to you about today. I want to talk to you about from dream to door code is how to launch, how to get going. And I want to, you know, cover things like the Minpaku opportunity, what, you know, what it actually means. I want to talk about the licensing and legal realities, due diligence, some tools to know your numbers. And then also go into the actual management of, which means guest experience, the hospitality, duty of care. And I want to touch on things like the risks and some real talk and some action steps. So who am I and why should you listen to me? So my name is Tracy. I have been in Japan for 25 years. I have been doing short-term rentals here for since 2011, 2012. Apparently we're off. Nope. Okay. I came to Japan initially in the year 2000 to work in a software company with my brother. We do language learning software. I'm still doing that now. That's actually pretty much become passive income, doing the dictionaries and language learning apps on mobile phones. So, I'm also the CEO of Tokyo Family Stays and also Tracy Northcott Consulting. In the past, I have been a bar. Can I say bitch? Sorry, Finn. I've been a bar owner. When I first graduated from university, I was a clinical chemist. I was working in laboratories, testing food. I was a very, very bad scientist. I used to blow myself up on a regular basis. my eyebrows have grown back. The Tokyo Family Stay story, this is me and my handsome husband. We started in 2011. We have opened and closed so many houses over the years. We have seen ups and downs of the market. If you're interested in my story, I wrote a book about it. It's called The Hospitable Host. I'm working on my second book right now. And we've been through the licensing laws. We've got a Minpaku Kanri license. We have a Minpaku licenses on many of our properties and also Ryokan licenses. And we've hosted, I say 12,000 guests. I really don't know how many. It's like many, many thousands. But the biggest thing that I do is I build very, very strong ties with the community. I'm dedicated to showing my guests what it's like to live locally and also to make sure that we have the smallest footprint possible with our community. So I contribute a lot to sort of NPOs and I try to give back to the community as much as possible. The past couple of summits, if you haven't been to any before, I covered the, if you want to see any of these more in detail, I can send you to the videos. I'm trying to cover something different every time, mainly so that it's interesting for me. And also things change and things grow and things move. I've covered history of Minpaku. I've done the different types of licensing, how to get the different types of licensing, how to convert from a Minpaku license to a Ryokan license. So these are all covered in past talks and they are available. And I put this slide up on every single one. This is from my dictionary. I wanted to show what the word Minpaku means, especially if you're not a Japanese speaker, the progression of the kanji. And it's sort of, Minpaku is a new word. It sort of came into the lexicon around 2003. And it is as with most Japanese words, it's a combination of a lot of different kanji and different ideas to talk about a new experience, which is the Minpaku. If you want to copy, it's a pretty dictionary, right? So if you want a copy of the dictionary, I'm happy to give you a free one. No problem. So I want to just jump right into Minpaku opportunities. So what is Minpaku? It came into law in about 2016 and then enacted in 2018. I'm not going to read out the Japanese, but there is a difference between the Minpaku and the Ryokan. and the monthly rentals. These are all under different statutes, and they all have, they're all different beasties. So they all have different different terms and conditions, different ways to operate. And I'm not going to, I dug into a lot of those, the granular details in some of the past ones. I'm just going to skip right over that because I've got more interesting things to talk about. But there's a lot of different property types and there's a lot of different areas. Each zoning is different. Why Japan? Why now? This has been my experience since the gates have opened, since the pandemic. I don't want to talk about pre-pandemic and post-pandemic are completely different beasts. So let's just talk about current times. There has been an absolute surge in tourists. I don't know what the current numbers are. Hotel occupancy and pricing is through the roof. So the ADR for a hotel has increased 22%, which is a lot, which means that there's a lot of people who are priced out of the hotel stays. But then again, with the weak yen, there's so many people coming in. But then again, minpaku stays, it's a different experience from a hotel and they're very different products. But Japan is also experiencing an interest in experiential stays. So that means, you know, you want to live like a local. You don't want to just stay in a generic hotel. You want to know what it's like to make soba, make, you know, do indigo dyeing. That is a real force of nature in the tourist market right now. The stats really do prove that out. But you can see the ADR is just going up and up and up. Let's talk about licensing. Very different. Anything that you think that if you own a short-term rental in another country, whatever you think about the licensing laws, leave them at the water's edge. Japan has completely reinvented the way that licensing is done here. And it's not for the faint of heart, but it's worth knowing what you get into before you get into it. So the Minpaku law, this came into effect. There is a strict 180-day rule federally. Local city councils can add different requirements to that based on whatever their citizens need, but they can never go over 180 days. So what you'll find is places like Megadoku or Karuizawa or other places have very, very strict minpaku rules, 90 days or 90 days only, weekends only. Some, if it's a residential A, not even at all. You can't even get a license. So you need to know what your address is or what you can actually do before you buy anything or before you even like look at renting something. There is the hotel license. I've been converting as many of my minpakus to hotels, to ryokans, mainly because it's so much easier to manage. But again, because it's handled by a different department, it's handled by a different law, you do have to... That wasn't me. Wasn't me. There are, you know, lots of different rules that you have to and hoops to jump through that are different from the minpaku. And again, I covered that I covered a couple of case studies in my last two sessions ago. There are also special districts, toku minpaku. I'm talking Osaka. I'm talking Otaku. I'm currently renovating an akiya in Otaku, and that because it falls under a different license. It's called toku minpaku. It has a lot of the same benefits of having a ryokan license, but it's a lot easier to get into than the actual ryokan license. So you do get 365 days. There's some other bits and pieces. So I'm not going to get really into the weeds for different areas. I've got a breakout session after this and we can dig into that a little bit more. Every street is different. So I want to talk minpaku as a concept rather than individual areas. If you want to talk your individual situation, come talk to me privately. But with it,
it makes sense.
In any case, where you go and get your licensing is through the Hokkenjo, which if you don't know, that's called the health department. And these are laws that have been on the books for quite a while. And because they were used for tracking and tracing disease, And that's why it's called, that's why it's done by the Hawk Angel, because after World War II, there was a housing shortage, people were overcrowded, and there was a massive health concern. And so all the housing laws were then covered by the Hawk Angel. And then, of course, the safety with the fire department and the city office. Zoning, zoning, zoning. So there's a lot of different zoning. You have to know which zone your property is in. It's a fast phone call. Call the Hawk Angel, give them the address, and they will be able to tell you immediately what zone you're in. And then, of course, drill down into what are the requirements for your property to get licensed. The nice thing about Japan is it's very transparent. So if you follow their rules, if you check every box, you will get a license. If you can't meet their criteria, good looks and charm will not get you over the line. You have to. The city office people have no sense of humor, and they're very strict. Veronica here will be able to tell you that. You have to follow their rules, and there's no wiggle room. There's no sense of humor, and there's no smiling and winking. No, none of that. But then again, the nice thing is they will. You know in advance that you will be able to get a license, so it takes out that. That stress point. I've got a glossary for all the different zones. If you need it, come talk to me again. Oh, so you need the zoom in, and you need all of the, you need all of the floor plans and everything for the house to submit. So that's what I missed on that one. But this is the flow chart. It's pretty simple, actually. You have the consultation, you notify all the people in the area. You've got to get your documents together. You put in your, once you've got all your ducks in a row, you submit your documents, and then you get your license. That's the simple answer. But my life is too short to be filling in Japanese documentation, let me tell you. I always hire a scrivener for my speed and sanity. My time is much better spent out marketing and doing guest experience and making sure that my properties are as profitable as possible. You have to go through a due diligence process. Have to go through it. Do not buy anything without going through, without knowing your numbers. There's a ton of dynamic pricing tools that you can get. There's AirDNA. There's Price Labs. That's what I personally use. I've also got a calculator where you can plug in your numbers. So your numbers then will be able to tell you what the projections from what the market is telling you from Price Labs or AirDNA, and then also what your numbers are for pretty much the standard running costs of running a short-term rental. And then when you get to the final number, you'll be able to see, is this a viable proposition or not? I talk a lot of people out of it. A lot of people come in with very high expectations of like, yes, I want to do this, and I want to, I want to run a short-term rental, but then the numbers don't play out. The numbers don't play out. It really depends on the zone. It depends on how big the property is and then what the market is saying. But with all these software tools, the guesswork is taken away. But also what people don't do much as well is factor in the amount of time, or if you're not going to be doing the work yourself, the amount of money that you have to pony up to a property manager to get the work done. A good property manager will do the revenue management. They won't phone it in. They will make sure that you're at the top of the revenue for your area. Don't pick a property manager based on how much they're billing you. So, I charge a lot for my property management, but I don't phone it in. There are property managers who are cheaper, and that's totally fine, but they're only going on what the market price is. And there is a bit of a push down because there's a lot of people entering the market there. So factor in your time when you're figuring out the viability of your project. So you've got to consider the ADR by ADR, average daily rate, occupancy and seasonal trends. So a property in Kamakura, for example, will have a much different ADR over the summer period from a property that's in Niseko that has a much higher ADR over the winter versus the summer. They are very different. You have to factor in a whole year. Hopefully you're extrapolating over the 3 to 5 years, because it is a long game. This is not a sprint, it's a marathon. So I don't know how much my time I'm going because I could start talking. I'm okay. I could start talking about the guest experience forever. I'm obsessed with actually defining your product. Do not be generic. Know who your guest is, know what they want and how much they're going to spend, and dial into that. You try to please everybody, you will please nobody, and you will only have price to differentiate yourself. So a lot of people think, oh, I've just got an Airbnb. No, what you want to do is really lean into who your avatar is. Tokyo Family Stays. Can you guess who my avatar is? So my places are in Tokyo. I look after families who are coming to stay in Tokyo. Now, doesn't mean I can't help people who are digital nomads. Doesn't mean I can't help people who are backpackers. I just don't know how to service them well. And I don't think that they'll be comfortable in my house. There is a key for every lock. By that, I mean, there is a property for every type of demographic. Know what yours is, know who your customer is, and really, that would be marketing 101. Know your product, know your customer, and that's how you maximize your profit. So there's a whole different market niches. So people think, oh, it's just an Airbnb. No, there's within, even within the Airbnb sphere, there's experiences, and Airbnb are doing this themselves. They're differentiating the products. They're differentiating between an urban stay versus a yurt versus a like a treehouse, or, you know, you can see that Airbnb are also doing that. So if Airbnb are doing that, you kind of should think like that too. So what is it that you have that is setting apart from your competition? Once you've defined your ideal guest, you need to define your guest experience. What are your amenities? What is your style? Have some story behind what you're doing. That converts. That means that people will purchase from you and not just be purchasing a Airbnb, a cheap place to stay. I don't sell cheap beds. I don't sell cheap accommodation. That's not my product. My product is a local experience. My tagline is live like a local, relax like at home. So my goal is to show my guests what it's like to live in Tokyo, even if it's just for a couple of days, but what it's like for my lifestyle. So people are interested about what it's like for, you know, this funny little Aussie chick who's living in a, you know, in Japan. I get to show people that. And I'm also getting to show my customers who want to see that, so that you can see that there's a product match, customer to product. I've also, in my due diligence pack, you have to consider when you're taking photos, who you're selling to and what are your amenities. And that's because that's how you're advertising. Again, you don't want generic. You are not selling a house. You are not selling you're not running room to room. The photography that you do is very different from the photography that you do to sell a house. And that's, you do have to pick your photographer well. Because, you know, you're not selling property. You're selling how people are going to feel inside your property. Yes, I'm in a real estate conference, but basically I'm a bit of an interloper. Real estate is my place of business. It's not my business. So I approach things very differently. You also have to think about your brand. What are the moments that you are offering? Your welcome baskets, how you speak to people. All of these are all part of the guest experience. I'm talking very generically now, but you know, every house is different. Every host is different. Sorry. So to set up, I have checklists. You do have to, you can't just put in four coffee cups and put on some curtains and call it a day. You have to know your guest. What are they going to need? How are they going to be existing in your property? And give them everything that they need to thrive. So you got to prep. You got to think. There is also the duty of care, insurance, all those really boring adulting things that we have to do, safety requirements. Taking care of people where they sleep is a very big responsibility. I find it's a privilege. So I take that very seriously. So I make sure people know where the exits are. There's first aid kits. There's an evacuation plan. I do have all that built in So yes, it's boring, it's adulting, it's not, you know, fun decorating a house, but it is part of the business and it's really important. And guest manuals, don't neglect the fact that you're going to have people who don't know how to use the air conditioning unit. They're going to just get there and press buttons and they're going to break things. So have all that prepped in advance. Budgeting, money, money. So you have to keep your costs under control. You can't just throw a whole bunch, like a whole bunch of money at it and expect to be profitable, because obviously it's not just how like maximizing your returns. You've got to keep your costs low. And so there's a few things that you can do to keep that under control. Yeah, you want to obviously have economies of scale with your utilities. You want to teach people that they can't leave the air conditioner on all the time. So this is part of the experience that I give to my guests. I teach them that, you know, electricity in Japan is expensive and this is how you minimize the costs. People respect that, but you've got to set it up in advance so that your guests know. There's also the acquisition cost. Now, something I'm not really, really up to. There's a bunch of real estate agents in the room. You have to be aware of the costs, the closing costs, the renovation costs, knowing that if you're getting a cheap place, you probably have to do a bit of work to get it up to standard to meet, unless you're doing budget stays. And that's totally a viable business model as well. Have to allow money for your legalities, the scrivener costs. What do I pay? Like $1,000 to $2,000 per property to get the licensing done, and then there's all the ongoing costs. How much are you going to spend on furniture? There are ways to save money, and there's things that you should save money on, and there are things that you really can splurge on. So again, determining who your ideal guest is, what your product is, will determine how much you spend on setting up, and photography. Need to have a good photo. You know, you will not sell your property and get the high rate of return if you don't have a good photographer. Marketing. I love this. Bunch of ways that you can market your property. Don't just think Airbnb. Multiple streams. There are multiple ways that you can market your property. Of course, everyone goes to the 900-pound gorilla of Airbnb. There are many, many other ways to diversify. I have a love-hate relationship with Airbnb. And so what I try to do is see them as one of my marketing channels, not my only marketing channel. I do not identify as an Airbnb host. I'm very, very particular about that. I'm a vacation rental operator or I'm a short-term rental operator. And I don't refer to any of my properties as my Airbnbs. Even though they're listed on Airbnb, totally fine. But this is the hill I will die on. So, but there's there are multiple streams. I get about 20 to 30% of my bookings through Airbnb, but I have a big direct booking presence. I use VRBO to a certain extent. I'm booking.com. They all attract different demographics. So again, matching the product with the customer and the channel and making sure that the marketing is set up so that you are attracting there are no wrong customers. It's just not the customers that you know how to serve best. So there's a whole bunch of ones. I'm doing really well on Google Vacation Travels right now, really well on that. So I'm getting a lot of direct bookings through Google Vacation Rentals, Marriott Homes and Villas, and that's for mainly the higher end, except the Marriott Homes and Villas in Tokyo, they're just awful. Now, automation. I could not run 30 properties if I did not have some automation in place. Also, I have an amazing team. But the main purpose of technology is to get you booked, get you paid, and help you stay organized. That frees up your time to be the best hospitable host that you can be. Give your guests the extra, the plus alpha, the nice things. So, but start where you are now. So, you can't just start and then not have everything automated. You don't know how your guests and how your customers are going to react to the different automation things. And there's a lot of shiny objects out there. So I think that's my next slide, actually. Know your biz and your guests. By that, I mean There's a lot of software companies out there that'll tell you that they'll take care of all your problems for you for a fee. So you can then end up spending a ton of money on tools that are just going to eat into your profits. So again, be the boss of your own business, know your customer, know your business, and then figure out the tools that are going to make your job easier. What is it that's taking the most amount of your time? Go out then and look for a tool that will help you solve that. Each tool then is going to cost you money. So it's going to eat into your profits. So, and then a lot of the tools don't play nicely together. Some of them are hideously expensive and don't do an awful lot. So don't believe the hype. Know your business first. Know your customer. Start slowly. You don't have to jump in with, and feel like you're missing out. Don't do the whole like, oh, I've got to have this tool because, that this is the market leader. Uh-uh. You know your business. Like, make it easy for you and how you run. Also, a lot of the AI bots, can you just pick them now? It's like, especially with the customer support, like they all tend to use the same wording. I can pick it a mile off. But at the end of the day, they're simply tools. They're not to replace the humanity. It is a human business that we work in. We look after humans where they sleep. We have to be human and use the tools to make it easier on you. But don't let them, don't let them take over or replace what they can't. And that is you and your personality and your brand and all of those things. Get them to support what you have decided is the, is the way forward for your brand. So just start slowly and tweak. I think I've got this slide twice. Oh, no, here we go. No one knows your business as well as you do. Do you want my little animations? I thought I was pretty clever with that. Risk management. Here's some real talk here. I've seen a lot of people sort of fall prey to the pitfalls of licensing, jumping in and not doing their due diligence first, not giving that 5-minute phone call to the Hawk Angel to find out if they can actually license their property. And then you're in a world of hurt. I do, with my business, I do property management for people who own. I also do what's called rental arbitrage, which means I do corporate rentals. I rent through my company and then I pay a rent every month. And then whatever I earn over above that, that's my earnings. There is, that's a good business for me to be in because I get to control everything. The only time it was not a good business was when the borders shut and the pandemic shut everything down. Check your licensing and your zoning first. But you also need to check with, if you're going to do rental arbitrage, you need to be able to find a landlord who is amenable to letting you create a license and actually running it as a short-term rental. If anyone is a landlord who is looking for someone to do a rental arbitrage, I'm always open for business. I'm always looking for properties. I can't open them fast enough. It's a different opportunity than doing a revenue share, a profit share, because as a landlord, you will get the same rent every month. Whereas if you're doing a profit share with me, I only pay you when I get paid. So it's a different model. But you do have to have good budgeting. Need to think about, you don't want to spend a ton of money on design if that is not going to suit your market. And also, it's not a passive job. So if you don't have the time to run, to be hospitable, to actually run a business like this, then, you're going to, hospitality burnout is real and it's going to make your life miserable. So, but don't be generic. So that's the other, that's actually in the wrong spot. Anyway, all good. So if you're a foreign investor, the common pitfalls are language and culture. As I said before, the Hawk Angel is inflexible. They have very strict rules. They are published. They're very clear, but you can't just, flash your baby blues and, have a winning smile and get away with it. Nuh-uh. You have to follow the rules. But if you follow the rules, you'll be able to, you know, do, you know, be able to have a fairly low key relationship with them. As long as you stay under the radar, you follow their rules, you put in your reports when you're supposed to, and then life's pretty good. You do have to be aware that especially multifamily homes or multifamily units have a kumeai. And if you have a unit in a that has a kumeai, the chance that you'll be able to get a license in a multi-family or multi-unit building is next to nothing. So unless you're buying the whole building and you're going to convert the whole building into a short-term rental, don't think that that's going to be an option to you. There's also fire codes and safety. You're going to have to do some retrofitting. You are going to have to put in like exit lighting. So like this one in here, that they're ugly as hell. They do not look pretty, but you have to have them. You need to get the fire department to come and inspect and get your certificate. Without your safety certificate, you will not pass go. And you also have to be really careful of the neighborhood. Like I said, I'm fastidious about making really deep connections with all the other small businesses in my area. They love me. There's a local yucky torty place that I walk in there and he falls on the floor and goes, Tracy, your money is no good here. So because I send him so many guests and he loves it. He doesn't speak much English, but, you know, he thinks it's hilarious that he gets to, you know, serve all these different foreigners. I'm very conscious of that. Seasonality, know your seasons, specifically for you, Finn. If you buy something in Kamakura, you have to be aware of your seasons and also be aware that there's a long-term versus short-term profits. I don't like, it really is a 2-5 ROI cycle. And back to the neighborhood thing. There's a bit of backlash, and that's for hosts who haven't done their work with the neighborhood, and they are getting pushback because there's so many tourists here right now. And if you don't do that work with your neighborhood, you are possibly going to get some problems. So get in front of it. Get in front of it first. Invite people over for coffee. Take them cookies. Make friends with them. Give them your business card. Show them that you are a committed small business owner within the community and you're bringing new money in. Make friends with the yakitori guy. Make friends with the soba people. Make friends with all those people because you know what? They will talk. And if they hear any whispers of who are those strange foreign people down the road, someone goes, they're okay, they're good people. So if you make friends with the community, they will do your marketing for you. Okay. And brand loyalty. Know the 2 minutes. Okay. Brand loyalty. I get the lifetime value of a customer for me is huge. I have so many people who come back year upon year upon year, and I'm so grateful for that. I get to see their kids grow up. It's a joy for me because I kind of like people. If you don't like people, and that's okay, maybe not the job for you, but I love people and I love seeing them year on year. I love hearing their stories. I love seeing their kids grow up, and I give them presents. They give me presents, and it's a value that I can't put money on, but I sleep well at night. I get so much joy. I know I do a good job. And if I'm going to get schmaltzy for a minute, it's like I have facilitated so many memories, family memories. People have come on their family trips. They've brought us for a trip of a lifetime, and I've helped that. That makes me feel pretty good. So, again, pretty schmaltzy, but I'll own it. So it's a very mature asset class. So here in Japan, so there are plenty of tools and plenty of software to help you. It's not the wild, wild west anymore. You've got to run a business. You've got to have a mature business, and you've got to make some very intentional decisions. So there's a lot of big data to support before you jump in. And there's also a lot of market data so that you can streamline your pricing strategies. It's a hospitality business. There is a massive, massive duty of care. It is not passive, not. But the squeeze is worth the juice. So I'm going to do a shameless plug here. If you want all of my tools, you can get them. On the little scan the code. I think you actually got an email as well, which had a bit of a discount code on it. There we go. because that's what I do, right? If you hire me as a consultant, you can pay me the big bucks, right, to do it for you, or you can pay $97 and do it yourself. But I'm here, but I only have so many hours in the day. So you can talk to me anytime. I've got a blog. I'm writing another book. I'm not a woman of mystery. So come talk to me. Buy me.
If you check out the Japan Real Estate Podcast, there's a bit of a discount on Tracy's products there
as
well.
Excellent. Well done. Or if you, like I said, if you want to buy a Tokyo property and let me run it for you, come talk to me. I can't open them fast enough. So there we go. That's me.
Thank you, Tracy. Get your hands up. While Seth is running the mic, I'll quickly ask one question from the stream. Can people somehow get a copy of the glossary for the various zoning types?
Yes.
Yes, from you. Yes, from City Hall. Yes, from who?
Oh, no. I actually have written a glossary. It's a downloadable PDF. I actually had it as a freebie from the last session, from the last summit. I can put that up. It is included in the due diligence pack. But if you only want the glossary part of it, it's a PDF and I can just like, I'm apologizing in advance to my assistant, Laura, because she's the one who's going to have to send it.
So get in touch with Tracy for the zoning glossary.
Yeah. It won't be me. It'll be my Laura.
Your Laura.
My Laura. I couldn't do anything without my Laura.
Thank you. Then to the room and we'll go back to the stream in a minute.
I'm from Hokkaido. My agent Saka and I, we're from Hokkaido Hobby Homes, and we're running our own basically Airbnbs and
short-term rentals. Thank you.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We have about 20 of them.
Nice.
And
Jacob is our man in Hokkaido, by the way. They also do purchases and sales, and they do a very good job so far.
All over Hokkaido, or just sort of in the like?
All over Hokkaido.
All over Hokkaido. Nice.
We had a problem last year.
Ooh.
I wonder if you ever deal with that problem or not. One of our properties got booked, overbooked, and it was just canceled before anyone get in. And we realized it was, they would call it Minpaku and Ninja Terrorism. I'm not sure where did it start, but eventually our owner decided to sell the property because...
What's ninja?
I don't know. That was a term online. There was
That's probably somebody like the competition, like trying to put you out of business with fake bookings, I guess, right?
That's it, fake booking. And we realized that there were other businesses nearby.
I'm a believer of like, you know, a rising tide rises all boats. I want to help people. Everyone should make money. Everyone should be successful. It is going to just help humanity as a goal. I'm really like, I'm on it today. But terms and conditions, you need to have some strict, like the way to get around it is just to have some pretty strict cancellation policies. And that means, you know, if you, you know, I have a very strict cancellation policy. You know, some of my, if you book direct with me, if you pay a deposit, only half of that's refundable. There is a problem with booking.com in that booking.com people will use that free cancellation. People will book 5, 6, 7 places and then not show up or cancel. No. I'm very, very strict about that because I'm holding the calendar for you. And if you're holding the calendar, I can't sell that to anyone else. So yeah, that's a nuts and bolts thing. That's a cancellation policy thing. And if you want me to show you how to do that, happy to do it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
My question was about the due diligence there. You said going to the Honjo and
Hokkenjo, yeah.
Hokkenjo. And then also getting to know the neighborhood.
Yep.
So you buy a place. Would you be going to talk to the neighborhood before you buy the place?
Yeah. Yeah, get a feeling. Every neighborhood's different. So Tokyo is not, I mean, I'm just speaking Tokyo, but even Japan, it's not a monolith. Every area has its own feeling, its own, you know, like, and there's no shortage of properties. Like, it's not like, you know, you don't have to rush out and get this, it'll be gone. No, there's plenty of choices out there. So, you know, but don't take too long, but pick an area that resonates with you. So for whatever reason, have your business goals in mind. If you like that area for your own purpose, just, you know, go around. There is no shortage of properties here. So, yeah, go. So, but even before you, call up, if you're interested in a couple of different places, call up the Hokkenjo, get the zoning, and then walk around the neighborhood. Go and speak to the small business owners, because again, Japan is built on small business. So go and talk to the owners, get a feeling, like, do they give you side eye when you walk in? You know, you don't want to deal with that. Like, you want to be where you're welcome, and also you want your guests to feel welcome.
You share with them that you're actually planning.
Oh, absolutely. Before I do, I go in there and I take my cookies and I, you know, do my bow and, you know, do all the aisatsu. It's just polite. It's just polite.
Oh, I'm going to go over here. Hi, Tracy.
G'day.
Just a quick question. Yep. When you convert from a minpaku to a ryokan.
Yep.
Does the ryokan have to be staffed, like have nope. people on
staff? No, there is a simple, so there's different levels of ryokan. There is the simple lodging version of ryokan, and I've actually got a graph on this. There is a ryokan that is multi-unit, and that's in a building. And yes, you probably have to have a desk, but there is the simple ryokan gyo. And then there's also another category, which is share houses. So there's multiple levels of ryokan. Yeah.
Thank you.
One quick question from the stream. Could you cover Mobara City in Chiba?
Mobara?
Yep.
Can I get there on my bicycle? No. No, I've got a pretty strict rule in that I like to be able to access my... The way I do it, though, that's the thing. The way we operate is that I've got a... cleaners, they have, you know, if they've got five properties to do in a day, they can't be schlepping out to Mobara, for example, and be able to turn over on that same day. However, I'm not the only game in town, right? I'm good, but you know, there's other good ones out there. So me personally, I can help you with your design and then help you get a good match on a good property manager.
Hi. So basically, I'm considering purchasing my first property here in Japan.
Omerito.
Thank you. I've been living 10 years here and I'm applying for the PR and I'm about to get it probably. But so basically what I wanted to do, like, some, so maybe you can give me some suggestions on what should I do, because I want to make my first property Airbnb basically. So that way I can pay the short-term rental and the mortgage as well, but
are you going to be living in the property at the same time? Are you going to do?
I wish that I can use it for, like, you know, maybe hanging out sometimes, you know, so that I can not have it full all the time booked, but as well, you know, use that for paying like some mortgage or whatever.
There's a couple of different things you can do. There's like a jutaku. Nisetai jutaku, which is like a house hack where, and I do this myself, I've got, you know, this is a multi-generational home. That's a fairly common idea in Japan. So there's actually like an in-law suite, usually where granny and grandpa come to live. But that you can actually get a license for, if because it's easier to get a license if you're living on the property. There's, again, I'm not going to get into the weeds of the different types of minpaku licensing, but there is the type that is owner occupied. And so that's when you're renting out your couch or your spare room, or you're renting out the nisetai jutaku, you're renting out the second generation house. There's that type. There's also the type of license if you are not living there, if you are remote. And that means that you need to have a minpaku kanri co-sign the license. And that's, you know, that's like owner absent type. I covered all this. I'll send you the video so that you can see all the so many different ways. But anything's possible. So, yeah. Decide whether you want to live and rent a room or whether you want to live remotely. So there's different strategies for those scenarios.